Hello everyone, you're welcome to Breakout with BB on the BBS Radio Station 1. It's a beautiful evening in Akura City here in Nigeria. I bet it's the same at your end. Nonetheless, no matter what your time is saying, the most important thing is that we're on the same frequency. My name is Bidemi Nelson and I'm your host. You may call me BB. I'm your girl next door. Being the first edition of this show, I'd like to formally introduce it to you. Breakout with BB is everything and anything about checking and preventing child abuse in our society today. Every year, millions of children are becoming innocent and helpless victims of abusive situations. This can range from maltreatment, exploitation, even brutality. They are treated as commodities for human trafficking, prostitution, and slavery. Other times, they are kidnapped from their homes and schools and forced into the army to witness the world of cruelty. The effect of this is that their innocent childhood is forcefully taken from them. This show is just for you if you've been a child victim of abuse, if you're a concerned citizen who wants the world to be a safer place for the children, if you're a parent, a school teacher, a caregiver, the list is endless. In fact, this show is for everyone. So come along if you need encouragement, a shoulder to lean on, advice, strength, you name it. Here, shame is a no-no. Accept my hand of friendship today. Help break out of the vicious cycle of abuse. It's our joint responsibility. And back to the topic of today's show. I would like to tell you it's something very exciting and educating. It's also something you find very informative. Today, we'll be looking at the rights of a child. Who do we call a child? What is the definition of a child? I checked in the Oxford Dictionary, and it told me that a child is someone or an individual who is not yet an adult. So, they are immature and sometimes not responsible. But I checked on the definition of a child in the Convention on the Rights of a Child, and they said a child is an individual between the ages of 0 to 18 years. So any individual between 0 and 18 years is considered a child. In law, we call them minors. If you'd like to call into this show to share your comments with me, ask me questions, share an opinion, I'd like to call on this number, 888-815-9756. I'll call the number again, 888-815-9756. The articles in the Convention on the Rights of a Child was something I found very interesting. I would want us to run through it quickly before we look at other basic rights of children. In Article 2 of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, we have what we call non-discrimination of children. It simply says that no child should be discriminated against irrespective of his race, religion, abilities, opinions, family type, language, gender, culture, disabilities, probably if he's from a rich or poor background. Irrespective of these differences, no unfair treatment should be meted to a child. I think that is something we should hold dear to our hearts. I looked at another article, which was in Article 3, and it talks about the best interests of the child. It simply says that when decisions are being made about children, especially the ones that affect them directly, their best interests should always be considered. This cuts across the board. It addresses parents, institutions, even the government. So when we are looking at things like preparing our budgets, making certain policies, or even enacting new laws, the best interest of a child should be considered. Article 6 talks about the right to survival, life, and development. This is a very fundamental right that every child should have. Article 12 talks about the respect for the views of the child. And how can that be achieved? By allowing the children to have active participation in decisions that concern them and respecting whatever opinions that they prefer. Let's look at Article 13, which talks about the freedom of expression. It allows children to say what they have in their hearts the way they feel like expressing it. It allows them to hold opinions as well. Article 14 talks about the freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. That's really exciting. The freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. Article 15 talks about the freedom of association and peaceful assembly. So a child is free to join any group that he deems fit to join, and also to have a peaceful demonstration if the need arises. If we restrict this, we are restricting their right to express themselves. Article 17 addresses the state and the media. Now, the state must respect the role of the mass media, and they must also ensure that children have access to information and materials from national and international sources that will promote their social, spiritual, physical, and mental well-being. Well, that's so much for the articles on the Convention on the Rights of the Child. We'll look at other basic rights of children. I tell you, it's going to be an exciting ride with me today. Let's start with the fundamental right of every child. And that right is the right to nutrition. The right to nutrition. With poverty leading the forefront of the global challenges today, it's almost impossible to deny the fact that hunger has become a vermin eating deep into impoverished nations of the world. Many children go hungry every day because their parents cannot afford to feed them. Others suffer from severe malnutrition. Actually, this starts from maternal malnutrition, where the pregnant mother cannot afford or have access to a balanced diet. This goes a long way in affecting her unborn child, even much more than the mother. Malnutrition can actually affect a child between the time of his birth to 2 years of age, and it can have an irreversible effect on that child. A balanced diet will consist of carbohydrates, protein, vitamins, minerals, fats and oils, and water. Severe nutrient deprivation is usually implicated in the cause of more than half of all child deaths worldwide. those that don't die suffer from symptoms that range from bloated, pale, sick, and easily bruised skin. Sometimes they have rashes and their skin changes pigmentation easily. Their hair becomes thin, tightly coiled, and pulls out easily. They may have swollen tongues, which may also crack. Their gums bleed, their joints ache, their bones ache. They have visual disturbances, even increased sensitivity to light concentration may be impossible for them. Gradually, diseases like anemia, diarrhea, and goiter infest their body system. Their immune system eventually gives way. I keep on pondering about the cause of malnutrition and why it has remained prevalent for so long. I had to make certain research to get my questions answered, and I found out that three reasons were responsible for the prevalence of malnutrition in the world today. The first reason is abject poverty. Because poor people cannot afford to buy food to feed themselves or their children, even when it's available to them, it's impossible for them to get food to eat. Food availability is not the problem here, but the absence of purchasing power, especially by poor people in third world nations. Another thing that causes malnutrition to remain prevalent is ignorance, where the purchasing power is not the problem, where you can actually buy food, where you actually have the money to buy what you want to eat. Deficiency in the area of dietary education is a problem. Wrong food intake in wrong proportions and at the wrong times is another reason why malnutrition has not declined. So, when there is money but no knowledge on how to get a balanced diet, then you have a case of malnutrition. The third reason why malnutrition has remained prevalent is the government. The government of many developing nations channel resources into many other causes except that of malnutrition. Even when they do, it's almost negligible. I believe they can introduce programs through which certain vitamins can be supplemented, such as citizenry, as the need arises. If the government decides to play an active role in eradicating malnutrition, I tell you, this will go a long way in helping many children today. It will also go a long way in helping many pregnant women today. Malnutrition, hunger, and poverty are the bane to the availability of good nutrition to children. It's time for us to work together to eliminate these problems with informed passion. Every child must eat, and they must eat well. I implore you, listeners, let's feed a child today. It's something that is worth doing. Let's take on the second right of the child, which is the right to education. I was having a chat with my friend recently, and he talked about a governor in a certain state in my country, Nigeria. And he said he visited a suburb where the villagers came out en masse to welcome him. And he was excited and asked them, "Do you have any problems you would want me to address?" But the villagers said everything was okay with them. But then the governor saw three little children and he stopped and asked his children, "What would you want me to do for you?" Those children had a different answer to those that the villagers gave. They said, In fact, the first child said, "In my school, we don't have roofs." The second child said, "In my school, we don't have toilets." The third child said, "In my school, we don't have teachers." It's amazing that the village that would say that they had no issues that they wanted the governor to address would have three little children among them who saw this big vacuum and made it known. Many times, lack of education to a child can affect this child's ability to be a balanced adult in the future. Some other factors that affect the right of a child to education include the prevalence of child labor in the world today. We have people employing children, employing them to work instead of them going to school. We have children moving into prostitution. We have them serving as domestic help for some families. We have them involved in human trafficking. They are victims of human trafficking. Usually, children involved in prostitution are always sexually abused. Children who are sometimes used as domestic help are usually physically abused. And children who are victims of human trafficking suffer every form of abuse conceivable in your heart. I mentioned the issue of schools. In developing nations today, education is really expensive in private schools, whereas the standard of education in public schools keep declining, keep falling. So what happens? What then can we say of the quality of education our children get when they go to public schools? So much to worry about, my friends. Another issue that affects this factor, which is the factor of no schools for kids to attend, is the issue of no teachers. While we keep saying that children cannot get educated, one of the major reasons for that is because there are no teachers to teach them in the schools. Sometimes, even the available teachers are not empowered through training to teach well. Many of these teachers can't impart knowledge. So, what do we do? Another big problem why the right of a child's education remains threatened is the absence of a conducive learning environment. This is a big headache in many developing nations today. Another case is that of high school dropouts. Many children drop out of schools for many reasons, and is usually high among children in class 3 to 5. What do we do? It's time to provide solutions. It's time to think of things that we can do to ensure that the right of a child to education is no longer violated or hampered. What do we do? I suggest that we improve educational standards. I suggest that we build more schools. I suggest that we train the teachers. I suggest that governments of these developing nations subsidize books for the children to use. I also suggest that we encourage parents to continue to educate their children at home. Be interested in the assignments of your kids. Be interested in their schoolwork, in their homework. Know what is happening at school. When these things are done, I believe we can promote the right of a child to education. I think we should go for a short break now. I'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. Monica just joining us on the show. I'm glad to have you. You're welcome to Breakout with BD. It's a new show on the BBS radio station 1. It couldn't be any better, guys. I'm glad to have you back. Now we're moving to the third right of a child, and that is the right to expression. The right to expression. This is found in Article 13 in the Convention of the Rights of a Child. And the right to expression of a child is really very exciting because I really thought about it many times. Children are a bundle to handle. People don't allow them to express themselves because they feel, well, he's rude to me, or he's taking me for granted, and a lot of other things that they say. But I tell you, whatever you think, a child has the right to express himself the way he or she likes. Sometimes children are curious, they are creative, and have active imaginations. Children are playful, they can tolerate ambiguity, and most times they can distinguish reality from fantasy. They are very receptive to ideas that an adult can easily discard. Some of these characteristics make us see children as people who would readily express themselves when the need arises. But what happens? We teach children instead to hold and keep their opinions to themselves and obey instructions like robots without giving us feedback, if I can use that word. But really, a child has that right to express himself the way he deems fit. As a matter of fact, a child can hold and express his opinion without fear. No matter what an adult thinks or says, no matter how hard an adult tries to repress that right, it's punishable. No adult should exploit a child or repress the right of a child to express him or herself. When adults are making decisions that affect children, the children have the opinion to say what they think would happen and have their views taken into account. This does not mean that children now instruct their parents. Of course not. This right just encourages parents to listen more to their children, listen to their opinions, and involve them in decision making. The ability of children to express and form their opinions usually develops with age. This is something I think every parent, caregiver, teacher should really begin to look at in a child. How do you encourage a child to express himself without being fearful, without having this inner inhibition that probably he may be shut down? In my culture here in Nigeria, it's expected that children keep quiet. It's time for us to break out of our ignorance and move into the light. Let's make our children who they are supposed to be. Let's give them the right, the opportunity, the privilege to say what's in their heart. Let them exercise the right of expression. And that's that about the right to expression. We are moving to the fourth right, and that's the right to information. Wow. Here, it talks about the right of a child to seek information and to receive information from national and international sources for their development. Here I am today talking about the rights of a child. But who really should know the rights of a child, if not the kids, if not the children themselves? The children should be informed about their rights, so that when their rights are violated, they can say so. They should know their position in the society as well. When children don't have access to information about who they are, what their rights are, what their position is in the society, what their role is in the society, you begin to have and breed dysfunctional children. So you see why it's important for you to have information given to your children, open to your children, allow your children access information that is age appropriate, that will help them develop properly. Like I said earlier, we have factors that mitigate the right to information. Such factors include illiteracy. And I told you, especially in places like Africa, where illiteracy is really high, a child really doesn't even know if he has rights because he can't read or write. So what do we do here? Even when you show him the rights, he can't read or write. So how does he understand to the rights that he's that are available to him? How does he understand how to implement his rights? Ignorance is another factor. When you don't even know you have certain rights, then how can you enforce them? How can you shout when it's been violated? These and many more would help our children understand and enforce their right to information, and will also help us as parents to understand that children actually need this information to grow up properly and to develop well. And that's about the right to information. We'll be going to the fifth right, and that's the right to health and care. When I got to this right, I really began to feel very sad inside of me, because I realized that many children, especially those in developing nations, do not have access to vaccination when they are given birth to. The parents cannot afford to get their children vaccinated, or the remoteness of the location of those parents cannot allow them to go to places where vaccination is being administered to the children. So what happens? The children get no vaccination. Other times, we have what we call partial vaccination. The children have started the vaccination program but can't complete it as a result of the two factors I earlier mentioned. It's either too expensive for the parents, or the remoteness of the location of the parents, or both factors working together. Either way, the effect is that those children become very sick and diseased. Diseases like anemia, measles, polio is very common around among children who are not vaccinated properly or who receive no vaccination at all. High mortality before the ages of 1 and 5 years is also very rampant. If you'd like to call into the program, I'll be very happy to hear you express and share your opinion, comments, even ask questions. Please call this number, 888-815-9756. I'll go again, 888-815-9756. I really want to hear from you guys. We'll be moving to the next right, which is the right to protection from abuse. This is a very big deal of discussion, friends. And we're looking at the types of abuse that children can be exposed to. There are four major types of abusive situations that a child can be exposed to. We're looking at physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, and neglect. And when we look at physical abuse, we are looking at the use of force, violence, even brutality to get the child to do something, or probably to punish the child. When we're looking at emotional abuse, we're looking at the use of verbal assaults on the child, use of derogatory terms on the child to run him down, to run down his morale, to make him lose his self-esteem, to make him feel worthless. But we have sexual abuse. We have the cases of sexual assaults on children, sexually exploiting children. And then we look at the cases of neglect, where caregivers just refuse to provide for the children, to take care of the children, to meet the needs of the children. Now, these four situations are the usual types of abusive situations that children are always exposed to. I was looking at my mail recently, and I stumbled upon the speech of the governor of Alaska, Governor Sean Parnell, and it really touched my heart. This is one man I believe should be celebrated by the world because he went out to say that abuse and violence must stop. I respect him, and I'm sure the world respects him. Let's move on to another reason why children cannot be protected from abuse. Well, the reason is because most of these abusive situations are sexual in nature. Kids are forced into the commercial sex world, or what do I call it? Prostitution. We have children being forced into prostitution against their will. Now, how do you protect your child from abuse when you force them into labor? You force them into prostitution, they are victims of human trafficking. This means abuse will always be around and be inflicted on the children. It's time for us to break the cycle of abuse. It's time for us to enforce this right, and that is the right to protection from abuse. We'll move on to the next right, and that is the right to protection from exploitation. Exploitation usually takes the form of child labor. When you see a child working instead of schooling, he's being exploited. It's always by compulsion and not by the choices of these children. Most of the time, children doing what I call child labor, it's always by the compulsion of their parents or the recruiters involved. Most times we have cases of slavery where poor and bonded families sell out their children to people that exploit them. It's a sad thing, but it's time we break out of the cycle of exploitation as well. The right to protection from exploitation must start as at this moment because I believe you and I are going to make that needed change. Starting today. We'll be moving to the next right, which is the right to development. You know something about life? Privileged children and favorable conditions. What could be better than that? That's perfect life, perfect child, perfect world. And when you have a privileged child and a favorable condition, this allows a child to explore his potentials to the fullest. And that allows him to exercise his right to development. But in the other way, when a child is underprivileged and he lives in an unfavorable condition, he cannot explore any potential that he has. How do you know a child is privileged? Usually, children are privileged when they have parents or caregivers who can afford to take care of them and provide for them. And how do you know that a condition is favorable or not? Usually, a condition is favorable in urban areas where children can have access to markets, schools, housing, security, water, power, sanitation, hospitals. The list is endless. A favorable living condition allows access to amenities that would make life easy and stress-free for the inhabitants. So when you have children who are privileged and they live in a favorable condition, they can explore their talents, they can explore their potentials to the fullest. And that is how we get the children to really have the right to development and really live this right in their own world. We'll be moving to the next right, and that is the right to recreation. And this is one that excites me because children love to play, children love to have fun. That's what life is all about, isn't it? Children love to have fun through sports, hobbies, discovering and using their talent, even entertaining people. Children like sports like football, volleyball. You all know the kind of sports that we played as kids, we loved as kids, and the sports that our children are involved in school today. We also have hobbies, which are fun things that our children like to do with their free time. We have talents. These are the innate abilities of children to do special things. And then we have entertainment. And these are fun things that children can do to entertain themselves or others. Recreation makes a child's mind more active and healthy. It's a very peculiar case in my country, Nigeria, because of the, well, in the urban areas, because of the working, or the timing of the work of most parents, we find out that when children are through with school, between 8 and 2, the children have to move them, the parents have to move them to another school. They call it the lesson school, between the hours of 2 and probably 6. It's even worse in some places where we have parents dropping their younger children, I'm talking about toddlers or babies, in the daycares from morning till 8, 9 p.m. at night. When you put children in this situation, they cannot exercise their right to recreation. By the time those kids get home, they sleep off like donkeys. They are tired, they are weak. They don't develop well. It's time for us to do what is right, to get our children exercise their right to recreation. It's time to move our children to that point where they can have fun and be children. That's about that, about the right to recreation. And we'll be moving to the next right, and that is the right to a name and identity. The right to a name and identity. The right to a name and, rather, sorry, the right to a name and nationality, sorry. The right to a name and nationality. Now, this right simply tells us that every child must have a sense of belonging. Every child must have a sense of belonging. You must have a name through which people can address you, people can call you by your name. It's important. And you must belong to a country. So, when this is done, it makes those children function well at home, in school, anywhere. When you know that this is your name and you're a citizen of this country, you can move around freely because you know your rights, you know the things to do, you know the things not to do. It also makes children know their position, roles, and privileges based on their identity. So, once this right is also exercised by a child, you give the child a name and he knows his nationality. He knows his position in the society where he finds himself. He knows the role he's supposed to play. He knows the privileges that accrue to him in that society. And that's that about that on the right to a name and nationality. We'll be going to the last right I'll be talking about today, and that's the right to survival. You know, of late I've been hearing about this case of abortion being on the rise and all of that. But I tell you, a child has the right to life. Let's say no to abortion, for God's sakes. Let's give the children the right to live. A child has a right to survive. And this can only be possible when we have good and quality healthcare systems available to them. It should be available and it should be affordable. So when our healthcare systems are of good quality, it should be available, it must be affordable. And when this is done, the right to survival of a child is not inhibited in any way. We should say no to discrimination, especially gender discrimination. Because I tell you, in some parts of the world, the boy child has a higher tendency to survive than the girl child. But when we see our children as equals, both the boy child and the girl child can have the same rate of survival, and that should be optimized. We should say no to barbaric traditions and beliefs. There was a time when, in some parts of Nigeria, where killing of twins used to be on the rise. But thank God for a woman called Mary Slessor who came and stopped that. We also have cases of children being killed because they have been detected with incurable medical conditions, which I believe can be managed. if they have quality medical or healthcare facilities. Sometimes they tell you, why don't you abort a baby if he has no limbs? Or maybe he has things like Down syndrome. Please, let's give these children a right to live. It's something they truly deserve. I'll be going for another short break. I'll be back before you know it. Well, we're talking about the rights of the child. This is Breakout with Bibi, and I'm excited to be back on the show. Right now, we'll be looking at what happens when the rights of the child is violated. What happens? So, when you violate the rights of the child, most likely it's synonymous to an abusive situation. So it simply means violate any rights that a child should have. Abuse the child. So let's try and stop abuse by enforcing and respecting the rights of children. That's very key. The second one is violating the right of children to freely express themselves. I talked about that in the freedom of expression. There have been cases of violations where we have lack of freedom of expression and information, where we have restricted access to reading materials, mass media, and other sources of information. We have restricted information as a result of discrimination, and we have a reduced right in terms of association. So they don't allow children to exercise their freedom of association to the fullest. So they tell you, you can actually associate, you can associate with these people on this terms, and on this terms is a no-no. So these are cases where the rights of a child have actually been violated. I won't be mentioning names and that, but I'll give you some situations. But child earlier, if you violate the right of a child, you abuse the child. Now, what are the effects of violation of a child's rights? The first thing is sickness and diseases. The child is usually sick and diseased. The second thing is mental infirmity. It is not mentally balanced. The third thing is we have what you call post-traumatic stress disorder. He lives under stress. He is fearful. He's suffering under stress. Even after that event has occurred, they call it PTSD. Another thing is fear, anger. You have guilt. Sometimes the self-esteem of the child is eroded. Other times they have suicidal tendencies. Sometimes you find them killing and attacking vulnerable people, even animals. The ultimate thing is death. So these are the effects of the violation of a child's right on children. Sometimes these children actually die. Now there's a part of this show that celebrates people, and these people would call them angels on a mission. Angels on a mission are people who do something to make the world a safer place for children. And I'm sure you know that a safe world for children is a safe world for everyone. Such things include helping vulnerable people, helping poor people, reporting cases of rights violations to the respective authorities, giving to the needy in terms of your resources, your time, your energy, creating awareness about issues that can enforce and strengthen the rights of children and ensure their respect. I can go on and on. So you're an angel on a mission. If you do these things and much more to ensure that the world is safer for our children and abuse stops towards children. And our angel on the mission this week will be at the governor of Alaska, Governor Sean Parnell. And I would like to really celebrate this man because of the speech he gave on February 14th. I'm going to read a quote of one of the things he said, and I quote, "Think about what it means to be a survivor of domestic violence or rape or child abuse. Imagine what it would mean to see hundreds of people marching together to proclaim, 'Enough already. We support you. You are not alone. You are not to blame.'" Wow. This is a quote from the speech that the governor of Alaska gave on February 14th. Next week, we'll be talking about something more exciting. We'll be looking at culture versus abuse. I hope you call into the program next week because I'm running out of time here. I really enjoyed my time with you. I hope you send me mails. I want to read from you. I want you to share your opinions, ask me questions. I want it to be something that we can both share our views on. I'll catch you next week. And until then, remember, be nice to the children. Do something good. Be a part of the change that is fair. It starts with intention. I love you all. Take good care. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.